reading we just had a little bit ago, it reminds me of kind of a stereotypical, like a Hollywood movie about the church where everyone comes in and the singing is bright, you know, and it says, and the dogs will lick up your blood where they licked up the other guy, you know, and everybody says, thanks be to God. What a great story. John, last week, when he was up here, told everyone about how, you know, we go through the lectionary, the so-called new lectionary, we're in our third year of it, and from summertime through November, there's a theme in the first reading that each year follows. It's different. This year, it's about prophets, and it's going to be Elijah, and especially a lot of Jeremiah, I think I looked at it, and Isaiah, I think, is in there. So this story is really a story about Elijah, and so we're going to hear little snippets of stories about Elijah for a little bit here. And we're not really, it's not really a story about Ahab and Jezebel at all, the way the lectionary is set up. So it's going to drop you right here. And I just thought maybe you kind of want to know what happens. Actually, it's kind of what you would expect. Elijah says what he says here, you know, prophesies these nasty things that happen to Ahab and Jezebel. And actually what happens is, Ahab does get killed and the dogs do pick up his blood, and it's all kind of like that. Very gratifying in a certain sort of way if you're kind of into seeing bad guys get theirs, you know? Well, kind of like that. And I don't need to tell you all the details. They're kind of gruesome, actually. but the point is that this story is in here, obviously, to give you a sense that God is on the side of justice, but particularly justice for the oppressed and the victims. He's not on the side of the unjust king, very clearly. Ahab and Jezebel get overthrown, and an entirely different dynasty takes over after this, and they're just kind of cast away from the history of Israel. It's kind of, though, satisfying on one level, but on a different way, it's not kind of that useful. And I think about this every time something comes into our culture about you know, this big struggle between good and evil, whether it's a movie or a book or something. And I wonder, how much good is this story to us in our day-to-day lives? And what I mean by that is, I like that Lord Voldemort gets defeated in the end, but how many of us really need a character like that, right? And, you know, and how many of these kind of stories about dark lords and whatnot, and they're so evil, and you know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. And it would be really useful if life were like that in some respects. Others would probably not be so good. But the point is that that's not really the way the average person's life works. I mean, we are not confronted with these very clear divisions where these people are the good guys and these are the bad guys. It happens occasionally. We have this huge example in our recent history with World War II and Hitler and all that. But you know, there's a saying that if you get into an argument about ethics, the first one that mentions Hitler loses. Have you heard that? Because it happens a lot. In other words, people say, "Oh, but the example of Hitler, yeah, okay, right. That was very bad." But that doesn't happen in regular day-to-day life all the time. And in that sense, it's not particularly useful to us when we're faced with the complexities of choosing right and wrong in our day-to-day life. Like, you know, the clerk gave me too much change. Do I give it back to him? Well, if he's Hitler, I don't give it back to him. No, it doesn't work that way, right? You know, the person, you know, their drawer is going to be off. It's probably a good thing for me to give the money back, right? It's a different kind of issue, but those are the kinds of issues that we really deal with day to day. The little pieces of ethical, moral behavior, which sometimes are very clear, but sometimes need a little work. We need to kind of look at them. Now, excuse me, I'm still getting used to this. If I pause and kind of twiddle my ear a little bit, that's what's going on. Our culture has two great big responses, I think, to deciding what's right and wrong. And some of them are kind of, how should I say, they're stereotypes. They're not, it's really more complicated than this, but this is the way we sort of think of them. One is that there is a set of absolute rules, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I'm not going to just say 10 to give you that association. But the idea that there are these very absolute rules that we can follow and lay down, and that they will always tell us exactly what to do in every situation. And that would be nice, except that it doesn't quite work out that way all the time. And what we see is often we get into these kind of legalistic and twisted situations where we're trying to apply a rule to a situation that has something else going on and it doesn't quite work. It gets very legalistic. It also happens to be the thing that Jesus is complaining about the Pharisees. Pharisees are very good people, actually. They're trying to figure out how to choose right and wrong. But what they end up doing is by applying a legalistic system, they forget what they were trying to do right and wrong for in the first place. It's not a matter of just getting us into the clear. If we do the minimum right, we think we're okay. But that's not what Jesus says. It's not about the minimum. It's not about just kind of getting in the clear and then we're okay. There's something lacking in that approach. On the other hand, we have what a lot of the world has adopted in recent decades, which is kind of this idea that, well, everybody kind of gets to pick what's right and wrong for themselves. And, whatever, right? Just if it seems right to you, that's okay. If it seems different to you, that's okay. And I think at the basis of that idea is there's a sort of optimistic view of human nature. You know, that if you let everybody make their own choices without any other constraint or anything, people will generally pick the right choice. There are times when that works out, but there are some other times when it noticeably doesn't work out. There's a little naivete, I think, in thinking that people are just going to make the right choice all the time if you give them the complete freedom to make the choices. Because, there are a lot of other things that enter into it. I kind of would like to have that vineyard. I mean, you know, I'm the king. He should respect me. Okay. You know how it goes. We don't always get those kinds of choices, but something like that can happen. My point is that what we've done is given everybody the freedom to make the choices, but also not given them a lot of tools to understand how to make those choices. And I think that's the point where we're left. And it's not like this is something new. This has been going on since there have been human beings. This is a back and forth problem that we always have, you know, all through history. What happens in the gospel today is that this is a very polite dinner. I mean, actually, one of the things I like about this story is it isn't Jesus out there yelling at the Pharisees, and it isn't a Pharisee over here, kind of plotting against Jesus. At this point, the Pharisee says, "Hey, Jesus, come over and have dinner with me." And Jesus says, "Fine." And they all are sitting down to this very nice, polite meal. And Jesus is even very polite to the fellow. He does the whole thing where he doesn't just blurt out something to his host. He asks him permission. He says, "I have something to say to you. May I say it?" And he says, "Certainly, teacher, say what you're going to say." And so they're having this very polite exchange. And but the whole thing is that the Pharisee says, if he'd only seen, if he really knew what was going on, he would know that this woman shouldn't be touching him because she's some kind of sinner. It's not exactly said what kind of sinner, but we all kind of get the idea, you know. And Jesus, of course, being Jesus, knows what he's thinking. And he says, "Well, no. It isn't, we're not here just drawing a line and judging between sinner and not sinner." In effect, he's saying several things. One is, well, you're all sinners, actually. And some sinners may be greater than others, but the real point here is compassion and forgiveness and love. And and seeing not the lines, the written rule here that she's violated, but the human being here who's suffering and is sorry and is simply suffering. Seeing that and having compassion for that, because that's where God's love takes us if we allow it to. When Paul talks a lot, you hear these things all the time today, and a lot of times you hear these things about law and grace and you know, we're justified under the law, we're lost, you know, and that sort of thing. Again, the common interpretation here is that Paul is saying, that Jewish law stuff, don't worry about that, that's repealed, we have a different law now, don't worry about that. Paul is kind of using law as an example, but if you really read the text and really understand what he's saying, I think you see that he's not really talking about the law in a particular sense. He's talking about the law as an approach to life. And he says again and again, well, what the law teaches is fine. I mean, you know, you can have a teaching, a black and white statement of right or wrong, but if that's what you're relying on, if you think that that's the way to become a good or better person, you're going to miss the point. And there's two things. You know, one that Paul is saying on a spiritual level, you know, accepting God's grace is a way to find a deeper sense of God's love and a deeper spirituality. But in a practical sense, that also means that what we are supposed to judge on isn't just a set of black and white rules. We are to take Christ within us. He says, I have to read this to quote, it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And what that means is he's taken on a whole sense of God's love and compassion and the whole fullness of understanding and attempts to pull it into himself. And in doing so, doesn't follow simply the law of right and wrong and justice and retribution, but something that sees the entirety of the situation as much as possible. If we just judge according to a set standard of rules and nothing else, we are putting ourselves in a kind of moral straitjacket. We are not allowing ourselves to grow as moral, ethical beings of character and depth. We're called, actually, to do something that is both easier in some respects, but also more difficult. And this little talk, by the way, goes over a lot better when I'm talking to junior high kids at Capitol Court, but it's the same thing for adults. It's growing and becoming adults, growing up into the fullness of our character and our being. It's not just about figuring out what the rules are so that we can do the minimum amount. It's about understanding that we need to take moral responsibility for our actions, and that means fully working through using our brains and our souls and our compassion to work through what really is the right thing to do. Sometimes that's a challenge. Sometimes that's a real challenge. I recently had an experience where in 1 week I was made, I'm not going to get into this too much. It's just a complete can of worms. But I'll just say briefly that I was made two stories on either side of the abortion debate, and both stories made me upset from different sides of the spectrum. Because on the one hand, one is legalistic, and on the other hand, it's like no criterion for judgment, no understanding of how to make a choice about what to do. We need to understand that we need the tools. If we're going to have the freedom, if we're going to have the freedom to make moral choices, we need to have the tools to make good ones. That's our challenge. That's what Jesus and Paul are asking us to do, to take on Christ within us, to do the hard work of making and picking those choices day to day, every day. But in the process, we will grow. We will be deeper, better people, more character, better adults, moving up and coming closer to God and of deeper and deeper understanding of who we are and what we're supposed to be doing and where we're going. That's our challenge. Jesus didn't come into the world to reduce us to children and say, here's what you're supposed to do, just do this and you'll be fine. Jesus came into the world to say, I'm here to make you more the people you're supposed to become, to raise you up, to be deeper, keep closer to God is being closer to our true selves. And that's a challenge, and it takes work.
but it's worthwhile.
Okay. Set it to 8 o'clock. If it's really still a problem, I'll take questions at coffee hour.